Good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. I was mentioning that this is probably the first presentation I've given at ASA, even though I used to be very active in the profession, in the organization, in at least 5 and perhaps even 8 years. And so perhaps everybody's forgotten me, but the long and short of it is that I'm the product of the land grant system, began in Indiana, doing 4-H as a kid. And then the other thing, and I've worked at several land grant universities, and the other thing is that I spent a good part of my career overseas, particularly in the dry areas, and that has given me a reinforced perspective on the effectiveness of land grant universities, and particularly the effective integration of the teaching, research, and extension missions. I joined UNR, University of Nevada, Reno, in 2014 after the state in general and the university in particular had come through a really bad recession and housing bubble that many of you have heard of, but it was particularly bad in Nevada. Arizona, Nevada, California, and Florida were the 4 states that were the worst hit by that bubble. I think the severity was particularly pronounced in Nevada because it's not a very diverse economy. But just to give you an idea of how bad it was, 1 in every 7 home in Nevada was in foreclosure at one point. In Washoe County, where UNR is located, the median value of a home was $350,000 towards the end of 2006, and by late 2010, it was $170,000 and still falling in a free fall. All right. So we were one of the worst hit states. There were consequences to that, to many organizations in the state, and that certainly included UNR. But the way they carried that out ended up disproportionately affecting the college and the experiment station. At first, a curricular review found the College of Agriculture, Biotechnology, and Natural Resources, or CABNR, to be underperforming on many metrics. This is a curricular review that was carried out by the provost. The Department of Resource Economics faculty challenged that report for incorrect and misleading data, but nonetheless, severe cuts were implemented. And the other thing was the provost cited a 2009 report with which I definitely take issue, but nonetheless, they said that agricultural contribution to the state was only 0.2% of GDP. So the fallout of that was pretty dramatic. From 2009 to 2013, the state legislature cuts to the university were about $70 million, about 30%. But proportionally, the losses on the college were even greater. We closed 2 departments, so that included the Department of Resources Economics and the Department of Animal Biotechnology. We lost 61 positions in the college, and that included 45 tenured faculty. And so there was a total of about $5.5 million lost in salary. All faculty were forced to go from 12-month to 9-month appointments. And so that saved another $450,000. It did not create great attitudes. We closed 5 academic programs, and then the experiment station funding fell from 2009 to 2013 from $9.7 million to $3.7 million. And then finally, 2013, this is projected, but cooperative extension's budget was cut by 72%, or $5.5 million. That resulted in huge losses in faculty and staff, and I think about 70 faculty extension. And right now, about 40% of cooperative extension's funding comes from counties, and they are not happy about it. All right. And then the other thing is, this is just, again, I want to reiterate, I'm expressing my own biases based on my background. I think that the experiment station was treated as an ATM to a certain extent, as the university was trying to fight its way out of its dire financial situation. So we had an iconic herd of banned sheep known as the Rafter 7 Merinos. The ranch associated with that was sold, and so were the sheep. These are just examples. Anytime there were water rights that were seen as lucrative, and any water rights are lucrative in a state with a city like Las Vegas, those were attempted to be sold. They tried to even sell the main station farm, which is about 1,000 acres facility, and everything that went with it. And then on that is also our Wolfpack meat facility, and they tried to sell that as well. And there was an upswelling of support to a certain extent to stop some of the more dire sales, but that's how bad it was, or so we thought. Then it got even worse still. In a state that started with agriculture as its base, there was actually a movement to close the College of Agriculture altogether, which to my knowledge would have been the first time that that had happened in the United States. And I was told when I was hired by the provost that had this position not been successfully filled, they were going to slice and dice the college and roll it mostly into the College of Science, and then the experiment station would have been put under the vice president for research. The legality of that has been challenged. Now, how did that happen was the question that I asked when I arrived. There really was a golden years of agriculture in Nevada, and those were associated with this particular dean named Dale Beaumont. He crossed swords with a former president who remains very popular, Joe Crowley, and the reason they crossed swords is because at that point, Dale Beaumont was seen as a very powerful political force. Supposedly he had presidents fired, and he had the legislature in the palm of his hand, if you will. Crowley had seen that as a threat and had him fired. Even then, Beaumont could go to the legislature, and the legislature said, no, you will wait 6 months. So there was a huge power struggle. You can find all of this in text and on the web, etc. Dale wrote a book about this, and I don't know if you can see this very well, but one of the things he put on his book was a graph of student enrollment. So this is when he was fired, and this is what happened to enrollment in the College of Agriculture. You can find this described in a book called It Was Nevada by Tony L'Esperance, and then the sort of fictional name that he used was Hope in his book, which L'Esperance means in French. But what he describes is they realized that dirty politics, federal intervention, and a host of other questionable factors were at work to destroy the agricultural industry in Nevada. The person who was hired by that president as dean to replace Beaumont was hired expressly to destroy agriculture and the college's association with the agricultural industry in Nevada. This has been corroborated on more than one occasion. And then the view, as described in that particular book, was that that president saw agriculture as below what he envisioned the university to be about, and that he thought the land grant concept was a bit outdated. There are even YouTube things about this. And then finally, in actions that were questioned as far as their legality, the president then appointed a sub-dean of extension, broke extension from the College of Agriculture, and in so doing, he destroyed, if you will, that connectivity between communities and the college. Some of you may know Neil Christensen. He is a fellow of ASA, and he was a colleague when I was at Oregon State University. He was a soil chemist. I didn't realize it until recently, but Neil actually had studied under Beaumont, and he shared with me a letter that Dale Beaumont had written to him after he had been fired, and he bemoaned the state of the college and experiment station. He said, all field stations except Fallon have been closed down and rented. I know that since then, even Fallon has been closed down and rented out to NRCS. Even a veterinary medical facility, it was now used to house Washoe County Extension. They've since been kicked out. Perhaps basic science has a place in populated and rich states. However, to the total exclusion of applied research leaves much to be desired. And then he states, even the beginning courses in soils, crops, and animal science cannot be taught because they are all basic scientists with no practical agricultural experience or interest. So in other words, the applied sciences were left. The connectivity with agriculture was broken. Any lab or other facility that was associated with agriculture was closed down. Even today, one-third of the faculty in the college are in the Department of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology. Now, before I move on, one of the beautiful ironies is that that president was president of a company that is now cultivating medical marijuana. So after having destroyed agricultural enterprises and that connectivity, he is now engaged in it again. You couldn't make this stuff up, you know. So again, my more circumspect view when I ask myself, why did this college suffer so disproportionately during these cuts? It's to me that decades ago, the college and experiment station had broken ties with major constituents, And this is part of internal university politics. And because of that, by the time these state cuts came, they had already lost the support of those constituents, political and otherwise. And just one manifestation of this that shocked me when I attended our first agricultural foundation, Nevada Agriculture Foundation meetings. This is a foundation that Dale started independent of the college, of the university, because he was afraid the university would try to co-opt those funds as they had everything else. But two-thirds of those scholarships were given to students who were leaving the state because they saw the university as having, and the college in particular, as having turned its back on its constituents. So then yours truly arrived, and people kept asking me when I was a new dean, what is your vision? And it was pretty simple. Fill some of those critical disciplinary gaps, function more effectively as a land grant, a college, which to me, again, means collaborative integrated work, establish key areas in which we will excel, and the one I've had some success with is this cluster called sustainable dryland agriculture. But the corollary of that is recognize where we will not excel. We can't, as small as a state and a university and a college, we can't be all things to all people. All right, and then the staff and invest accordingly. The reason I like sustainable dryland agriculture is because it's more than just agriculture itself. It includes other things that are in the college, like natural resources, economic development, the environment, and then food security, and then, of course, nutrition, which is an element of food security. So now we're trying to move to this new mode where we insist upon more collaboration between teaching, research, and extension missions. And it's not easy. You can imagine that after 30 years or 20 years, depending upon what the issue is, we're trying to change a culture. And this is just a graph that I use to show how I sort of vision that in the case of agricultural field. We do more than agriculture, but in this example, we try to scale up from the molecular to the farm scale, community or watershed, and then to markets. All right, and then we try to use tools to support those efforts, and those could be GIS or models. There's nothing new about this, particularly earth-shattering, for most land-grant universities where I work. It's just none of that existed, in my view, my biased view, when I arrived at UNR. By working with the administration rather than against them, there's been a lot of politics that continues, I think, at UNR that I'm simply not used to. I've been on a hiring spree. But I want to point out some of the positions that I put back to try and address some of the huge gaps in applied sciences, and the absence of which had made it very difficult to take some of the very good basic science from translating into something that impacted people's lives, economically or otherwise. So we put back somebody in dairy. We have soil scientists. We have ag science instructor. I hired an agronomist. It's the first agronomist in the College of Agriculture in 30 years, if you can imagine. Similarly, I hired somebody in horticulture. First time we'd had anybody in 30 years in horticulture in the College of Agriculture. An entomologist, quite similar. It hasn't been quite that long. We do have entomologists, but they reside in molecular biology. And so they don't do any work in the field at all. The largest commodity in the state by far, it's not big by Texas standards, et cetera, but it's beef cattle. We didn't have anybody working in beef production. Now we do. We've also hired somebody in veterinary physiology and animal reproduction. We're now going through a search for a plant breeder. Again, we haven't had a plant breeder in the College of Agriculture in 30 years, if you can believe it. And we're also hiring somebody else in the range management. I've added programs, a College of Agriculture, which didn't have an agricultural science program until recently. And so since 2013, and that was in its nascent form even before I arrived, but it's gone up from 5 students to 80 in 3 years. And Rangeland Ecology and Management, I had to shift that. It was interdepartmental. And the problem is, if you're familiar with the problems of the West, they're very much are environmentalists on one side, one extreme, who are sort of at loggerheads with those from production side. In our case, the staff was decidedly on the environmental side. And so, again, we were perceived by our constituents as being anti-agriculture. And so I've revamped that program, and I'm making new hires accordingly. So despite all the doom and gloom, enrollment among students continues to increase. What I want to show here is that just in a few short years, by making those small adjustments, we've seen enrollment in the Department of Agriculture, Nutrition, and Veterinary Science increase dramatically. It's tapered off a little bit here, but that has more to do with putting brakes on enrollment for raising standards. So let me just summarize then. Since 2014, when I arrived, 23 faculty have been hired, many in disciplines that haven't existed for decades, like beef production, agronomy, and horticulture. We still, because we were hit so hard, we are very weak in key disciplines, and in particular, ag and resource economics. Only two faculty from that department were left standing, and they moved to College of Business. All right? And we have the situation there where you have people with large experiment station appointments that are no longer accountable to the experiment station director. I've made structural changes as well. I've changed all the department chairs. I've made emphasis on collaborative work and outreach, and I can use hatch funds and other various sticks and carrots to make sure that happens. As of about 6 weeks ago, Crawford Extension has administratively consolidated with CABNR and NAES, so again, so we can get those synergies going. That was very politically charged. That was a huge effort, but I would like to point out that there are at least four other land-grant universities in the West that have done that recent times. In other words, they experimented with this model where Extension left the College of Ag, and now they've done an about-face, and they've consolidated for, I think, very good reasons. Enrollment and teaching budgets are increasing, but that's driven by enrollment. Cooperative Extension and the Experiment Station have not yet really benefited from a turnaround in budgets. So we are rebuilding not only the College and Experiment Station, but really, I can't emphasize this more enough, it's ties to our constituents. I spend a lot of time in fields and on the road and driving around the state, meeting people who say things like, where the hell have you been the last 15 years? And I can't overstate how important that is, and hopefully all of you realize that. Despite all that, you know, I think things are looking up. Right now we're looking at a 5% cut in our state budget. We'll know in the next few months, but it just seems like the challenges never stop. All right, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Well, I just have a comment. The only good thing about coming in here is that it's not so bad where I am.
I think you do so at your peril, as we've seen here, and we're not the only state now that, I mean, there are states across the U.S. that are getting hammered right now. It's absolutely important, I think, that you remain in contact with those constituents, but the constituents are changing all the time as well, as I needn't tell you. And so as society changes, how you maintain that contact, I think, also changes to a certain extent. But it's not simply that people are losing track of where their food comes from. I think they're even losing that attachment with natural resources in general. It's just a different population. But we are educators, basically, and I think we have to keep educating the public and reminding them not only the importance of what we do, but reminding them of the payoff that they're getting on their investments. I think that's a big part of it as well. I would say third. It follows mining and gaming, or gaming and mining, depending on the ups and downs. But I would say, you get into the economic argument. What is the contribution of ag to the economy? But if you agree that with the multiplier effects and that sort of thing, you get to about $4.5 billion. So it's not in a state of 3 million, and 90% of those are urban. It's not huge, but within the state, it is large, and that's been shown. And then the other thing that I like to point out is it's the driest state in the U.S., and Nevada is representative of a huge part of the Earth's surface.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep.